questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our special guest today is Peter Dornan, AM. He is a sports physiotherapist, a fellow of the Australian Sports Medicine Foundation, founder of the Brisbane Prostate Cancer Support Group, and the author of numerous books, including the one we're going to talk about today, Conquering Incontinence, A New and Physical Approach to a Freer Lifestyle. Peter, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
You describe yourself as being, I think, 73 years old, a grandfather, a father, a husband, a physiotherapist, a sculptor, and you climb mountains.
That fits me to a certain extent, yes, sure it does.
So, Peter, you've always been active in your lifestyle and you've been surrounded by sports people in your physio work. How did it feel to be diagnosed with prostate cancer in your early 50s?
I was 52 and it was a pretty devastating thing to happen because I didn't at the time know what my prostate was, where it was or what it did. We did not talk about it and there was no one else to talk to even when I was diagnosed. At the time, so I was extremely fit, very healthy and really had nothing major wrong gone in my whole life, so it was a really devastating hit.
I guess it was a life-threatening announcement to you, was it?
It was at the time, it certainly was, because when you mentioned the word cancer, it really meant a death sentence, or close to it, and that's all I saw. My father died of bowel cancer at 60, so that's the first thing I saw was death. And there wasn't a lot of research to show that the prostate cancer wasn't a lot better at that stage of the game.
That no doubt influenced you in making the decision to have the surgery rather than some other type of treatment.
You're offered various sorts of treatment, but I guess I just wanted it out and wanted to pretend it never existed and get on with my life, but I hadn't really considered the effect the side effects were going to have on me, mainly because I wanted to save my life. But once you've made the decision and the prostate does come out and indeed my life is saved, then you come to a process where you have to survive surviving. And that's one of the biggest challenges as much as anything.
So when did you realise how serious these side effects were?
Virtually the moment I woke up from surgery. Just because you get incontinence. You had a catheter in, and you knew that you were leaking the whole time. You had erectile dysfunction, and you know, nothing worked there for a long, long, long time. And so straight away, you realised that this was a different scenario to what you ever used to, and you were never prepared for it. The doctor were never prepared here for it, and in fact, you can't prepare yourself for it emotionally or any other way. It virtually hit me the first week. When the catheter came out, that's when I knew I really had some troubles.
And you're not coming to this from a position of ignorance. You'd been a sports physio, you've been in the medical field for many years when this all happened, so a lot of other people must get a shock when they come out of the anaesthetic, I imagine.
Well, at that era, they certainly do, but I think what's happened, and I'm very... and I'd like to think that I had a great deal of influence in changing the way that that men and doctors in the profession look at prostate cancer now. Will tell you, and you probably will ask me, but I didn't have anyone to talk to at the time. No one put their hand up to say they had prostate cancer. Men didn't talk about those sort of things because it wasn't part of our ethos to let someone know there was something wrong with us. So I put an ad in the paper and I said, there's got to be someone out there going through what I'm going through. And indeed, there were about, we had a meeting of about 70 men and their partners on the first night. So they were out there, okay, they just didn't know how to get going. Mm. So we started off the first support group in Queensland. And then after about a year, it grew so big that the Cancer Council realised that they weren't helping us because they didn't know there was anything wrong with us. Men didn't put their hand up for the same reason. There was no way they knew. So they invited us to go back to the Cancer Council rooms because I couldn't hold them in my rooms. I'm a physiotherapist. That's where we met for the first year. And then from then we've just simply grown, and we've got 1,000 members now. It's the biggest group in Australia. We have 32 groups in Queensland to form the Queensland chapter. We have 178 groups around Australia to form the Prostate Cancer Foundation of Australia. But in that time, we've educated men. We've made them more aware. We've made doctors aware. They have to talk to men and let them know exactly what the side effects are. So that what happens now is that before a man's treated, he's taught how to do pelvic floor exercises. He's told about incontinence. He's also told about the even more important consequences of losing your erection, how to manage that, how to prepare for it, and more importantly, when you do have the surgery, how to get over it when you have the surgery. And I think that's the big change now.
These support groups, I think we can add that to a lot of the other great work you've done in the community, and of course which led to you getting your AM. But the surprising thing is that, I mean, you've described urinary incontinence as being the most widespread yet least known and understood affliction in society today. So it's very common, but is it this old thing that people don't want to talk about it?
No, for the reason that our generation didn't speak about anything from that era. I mean, from that area, it was taboo to a certain extent. And I'm talking 20 years ago, don't forget. In fact, my mother-in-law wouldn't even mention the word prostate, that I had prostate cancer. It was such a thing we never talked about. It was so hard. But, of course, things have changed now. We have whole awareness evenings, awareness nights, and everyone is very aware of it. Wives, as much as what men are now. And the thing is, of course, our wives are generally the one who rings the bell for us and makes sure we get our PSA checked. So there's been a tremendous turnaround in public awareness, and that, I think, hopefully one of the things I can be very grateful for, and hope that I might be able to remember for something like that.
Yes, because initially you had a real problem with incontinence, and it's not really a laughing matter to be wetting yourself, is it?
It's extremely difficult to cope with because I'm a physiotherapist, so I do a lot of lifting, pushing, pulling, bending, chucking patients around, and every time you increased your intra-abdominal pressure, you would squirt. So that means you had to wear pads all day. In fact, for the first 3 months, I actually had to wear an external catheter because the pads weren't helping, and that's what led me to really try and get to the bottom of this. I mean, this was as big a deal as anything. And so once you've gotten used to the idea that this is going to be your life, then I worked out a program. The idea from my fellow physios, I knew that female physios treat females with incontinence, but it had nothing to do with me. So I approached them, and they taught me how to do basic pelvic floor exercises, something that every woman knows how to do and since they were young. And so I learned how to do those with a will, and then as time went on, I got a fellowship to the States, and I learned how to do a lot more than that. I developed a very aggressive program to incorporate the abdominals and functional training, because the pelvic floor muscles, the abdominal muscles, are all part of the same system, and the stronger you make the system, the better and quicker and faster your pelvic floor muscles are going to work. So I developed a very, very strong, I did a lot of weight training, running training, swimming training, sit-ups, and got myself superbly fit in there, and it virtually dried it up, and it stayed that way for many, many years. As I've got older, and I must admit to you and confess, as the years have gone on, I've started to leak a little bit. And so I started to do the exercise again, and they helped me. But I just think in the long run, I would have to do what I recommend to people who doesn't get any better within 2 years, and that may be to get a perineal sling. A perineal sling is a simple operation where they, now, which they didn't have available at the time, where they put a sling underneath the urethra. I mean, I really am fine now, but if as I get older, and I'm 73, I don't want to be leaking at all as I get older. So that will be probably the way out of it for me. So the exercise will work while you're young and fit and active, and you can keep it going. And for cases of very mild incontinence, it works fabulously. But for serious incontinence, they only work a certain amount of time until you get older.
Well, we're going to talk about those exercises in a moment, but we're going to take a short break now, and this is a very special song. It's called The Morning Has Broken by Cat Stevens.
Morning has broken like the first morning. Blackbird has spoken like the first bird. Praise for the singing, praise for the morning, praise for them springing fresh from the world. Sweet the rain's new fall, sunlit from heaven, like the first dew fall on the first grass. Praise for the sweetness of the red garden, sprung in completeness where his feet. Mine is the sunlight, mine is the morning, born of the one light, Eden saw play. Praise with elation, praise every morning, God's recreation of the new day. Morning has broken like the first morning. Blackbird has spoken like the first bird. Praise for the singing, praise for the morning, praise for them springing fresh from the world.
That was Morning Has Broken by Cat Stevens, and we're speaking today with Peter Dornan. Peter is a sports physiotherapist in Brisbane, and he's talking to us today about the contents of his book, Conquering Incontinence, A New and Physical Approach to a Freer Lifestyle. Peter, you quote Winston Churchill in your book, never give in. Did you feel like giving in at early stages of suffering from this incontinence?
Quick answer is yes, because there were times. And it wasn't from incontinence only, it was because also the erectile dysfunction. The doctor didn't know what to do about it. He just said, you might be even try an injection and it might do some good, but and it did, but there was no real education. And it took me years before I actually got to learn how to use an injection to assist the erection. It was a really devastating situation because I didn't know how to get my way out of anything. Very, very strong suicidal thoughts because I couldn't see my life having any quality of life. I wasn't enjoying it. I couldn't exercise. I couldn't make love. You couldn't do anything. So being immature and young and not having a chance to think about life in a bigger way, that was very much an option. As it turns out, what happens is that after a while, you go through all the options and you go into yourself and you think a bit and you get what's called post-trauma stress syndrome. You become very depressed with this whole thing, and that's when you get the suicidal tendencies. But eventually, if you do enough research, talk to enough people, do enough study, enough insight from this, you get what's called post-traumatic transformational growth. And it's a process you go through when you come through the other end, where you actually are a much different person. You've learned about life from the very basic principles of who you are and what you are and what's important to you, crystallize things. So you work out that life's a very, very precious thing. You're only here for one sliver of time. You're not to waste it. In fact, I got quite an elation for life after that, after I got through and put things in perspective. I still eventually got my incontinence back and my erection back, but I had to go through the stage of working out how fabulous life was, and that then led me to challenge myself in other ways, such as climbing mountains and doing all sorts of adventurous things, like going down the Zambezi and swimming and running and writing books and being creative. I am a sculptor. I wanted to do everything that life offered me and do it as best as I could. That maybe is a dubious upside of the whole process of having your life threatened.
Well, when you talk about erectile dysfunction in 20 years ago, that would have been even more of a no-no, I'm sure. But these days, I guess men can take advantage of Viagra and other treatments.
Well, that's for sure, because there's no Viagra then, not at all. The doctors did have an injection you could put in your penis, and that worked, but it wasn't nice. It didn't work for a lot of men because it was too painful, and it was often not easy to do yourself for self-injection. So with a lot of men, in fact, there was a high suicide rate amongst men who did not have awareness of this and I'm talking about men in the country particularly, because my group touched men in the country. So this is a serious disease that was not handled well in the early stages, because I don't think doctors understood the psychosocial aspects of it very well indeed. They were there to save their life, sure they did, but there was a lot of parts that were missed. They were called unmet needs. Things have changed tremendously. A man diagnosed with prostate cancer now, for a start, he knows what his prostate is. He knows there are processes to go through. There are support groups, there are support counselors, there are hotlines. There are so many ways that you can help yourself that it's still a big deal, but it's not such a big deal anymore.
So men get together regularly with the support group. I wonder if you could tell us how a typical meeting might go for someone who might be considering joining a support group.
What we'd normally do is to have a guest speaker, so that we would actually educate ourselves. So we'd have someone come in who's a specialist about prostate cancer from any of the aspects, like incontinence or erection or the new treatments or psychosocial, whatever. We'd get someone to talk on some aspect of prostate cancer, and after that we'd introduce any new men who want to be introduced, find out what part of the journey they're up to, give them any information they want to, assist them by saying, yes, this is the way to go, this is a good idea, this is what I did. So face-to-face was always very important. I might say that over 20 years, I've had something like about 200, I've organised about 240 meetings, so to me, I've actually educated myself in all aspects of prostate cancer. Has been a great process. Mm-hmm. A lot of the men actually have been around for that long as well. They come and stay for 2, 3, 4, 5 years, get themselves educated, and then they move on if they want to. So that would be a normal meeting.
And people often say that men don't talk about medical problems and won't go to the doctor. Do you find the men are prepared to open up completely about their own situation in these meetings?
Once they get into our rooms, yes, all of a sudden they find there's someone else here who knows, who stood in my footsteps, who understands what I'm going through. I trust the situation, and they see other men opening up, and they'll get up on stage and they'll cry and they say, this is what happened to me, and I'm in a hell of a mess, I was going to die, and you know, and I say, I need help. They put out their hands, and it's not that hard. Once they're in a situation and they know that it's private, and they know that they might be able to get help, and they know that they are just a human being, they are not the sort of male who's got the three P's, and I will tell you about that, that a male identifies themselves as being the three P's, and that's to protect, to provide, and procreate. That's what we've done for thousands of years, and that's been our role. If that role is challenged, we lose our identity and become very, very upset. So we don't let people know there's something wrong with us. But once we get into this little circle, then other men, they can see other men that have dropped their guard, and they've become just human beings after help and after support and assistance.
And they've got the resource of your book, Conquering Incontinence. Your method of treatment, we talked a bit about it before, but there are pelvic floor exercises, there are lifting exercises. I think you jump so that if you're in an unexpected situation, say jumping over a rock, that it doesn't lead to a squirt. Are there other things that are important in your treatment?
No, I think it's mainly a sort of a common sense, functional thing, trying to get yourself fit for all aspects of life. One of the things that would worry you was when you sit in a chair and you go to stand up, the extra increase in abdominal pressure would make you squirt. So that's what you train for. So before you stand up, you actually pull the pelvic floor muscles on first, then you stand up. If you're going to go running or pick up a suitcase, anything that you know makes you squirt, then you try and do the exercise, then you try and pull the pelvic floor muscles on before you actually do that. So you're training a sort of a reflex cycle if you can.
Your treatment has certainly worked for a long time, and you mentioned just briefly climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, and I think you've been up a couple of other mountains. Are you scared of heights, Peter?
No, never was. I love the adventure of just going out there, being with one with nature and challenging myself. And after a while, you find that you're not just challenging yourself, you're not trying to climb a mountain. It's actually a journey towards yourself, because the more you go, the harder you push yourself, the more challenging situations that you get into. It's actually a sort of a symbolism of life, and you get to a hard place where you can't get around, so you've got to work out where to go. It's also a bit of danger there, and so you backtrack or you go around here. The whole idea of mountain climbing is to challenge yourself and to survive, and I don't do anything particularly dangerous. But the idea is to see what your body can do and challenge myself tremendously so that I know who Peter Dornan is, what he stands for, what he can do, what he's capable of doing. But this Ferrari body that's taken thousands and millions of years to develop can finally do.
We are a shining light. For people that want to find out more, Peter, can they go to your website and find out about your book and the support groups?
Yes, they can do that very easily. They can just... peterdornanphysio.com.au, that's very easy to do, and they'll see my books there if you want them. If you email me, I'll soon tell you how to get hold of them anyway.
We've reached the stage of our discussion, Peter, where we ask our guests if they'd like to pick a song. Would you like to tell us which song you picked and why you picked it?
Yeah, I picked a song called Stout-Hearted Men. It's one I heard when I was younger, and I like musicals, I like singing, I like music, but this particular one sort of sprung out a bit because it's from the 1939 movie called New Moon, and it's about some American settlers in Louisiana. They've been bullied by the French who actually were in charge of Louisiana at the time, and they didn't know what to do. So one man said, "Give me 10 strong men and I'll soon give you 10,000 more." And that's what they did. So they got 10,000 to beat the tyrant. When our support group started up, I started with 10 men. In fact, that happened to every support group around Australia. They all started with about 10 men, and now we have around Australia 10,000 men, so it relates exactly to what our support groups do. And I consider these men to be stout-hearted. They stand up for what they believe in. They help each other. We're a group of stout-hearted men.
Great story. So this song will take on a whole new meaning.
Some men who are stout-hearted men who will fight for the right they adore.
We are the men.
Start me with 10 who are stout-hearted men, and I'll soon give you 10,000 more.
Stout-hearted men.
Oh, shoulder to shoulder, and bolder they grow as they go to the fore.
Bolder,
there's nothing in the world can halt on our man can stick together, man to man.
We are
the spirit. Never fear it, you'll see it through.
Oh, and inspire other hearts with their fire.
For the strong obey when a strong man shows them the way.
Give me some men who are soft-hearted men. Men who will fight for the right they adore. Start me with 10 who are stout-hearted men, and I'll soon give you 10,000 more.
Oh, shoulder to shoulder, and bolder, they grow as they go to the fore.
Then there's nothing in the world.
That was Stout-Hearted Men by Nelson Eddy. Just remains for me now to thank our special guest, Peter Dornan. Thank you very much for being on the program.
Yes, it's my great pleasure, I can tell you.
We'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, and send us an email and we'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And we'll be back next week with another show on Dads on the Air.